CliffCentral.com.
Yebo! It's Tuesday morning. It is the 3rd of May. CliffCentral.com. We want to hear from you. Let us know in your comments here on the YouTube channel. It's the best place to get hold of us live. If you want to send us comments that are not live, because this is a podcast and most people don't listen just because we're on, they listen when it suits them. You can send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com, and we will reply to all of them. Tell us what you got up to this weekend. Tell us what you've got planned for the week, the four-day week ahead, and we'd like to hear from you, right, Bakabantu?
We'd love to hear from you guys. Exactly. So drop that email.
Exactly.
We have an entire studio of people waiting to respond to you guys.
Right. Damn straight. I ordered some stuff the other day. I went onto one of these websites where you buy stuff and they deliver it a couple of days later. It's probably been about 2.5 weeks, which is maybe longer than it should have been. But considering all the upheaval with the floods in KZN and everything else, I'm quite pleased I got a delivery at all. But one of the things I've ordered is, and I don't know how important this is, but my sister and her boyfriend swear by it, and a lot of other people have told me it's essential, is a humidifier. So I don't know. You know, I don't really use heaters in the house, even when it's very, very cold, because I think they're bad for you. I think they do dry out the air. But now, you see, we get into a situation where you have one machine that does this, then you need another machine that does that. And eventually you've got like 10 different things running, and you imagine the electricity on all of that stuff. So I've now decided I'll take their advice. I'm going to go with the humidifier, but I'm not sure whether it's really essential. Speaking of essential,
it's not.
You have to put these oils into it as well, which apparently like... You know, if you're feeling sick, and you said you've got a frog in the throat, that's what you said at the start of the show this morning. Maybe this is the kind of thing that will keep us healthy and flu and cold and COVID free through the winter.
No, it's not. Humidifiers are a myth. Please, Lebang, don't stand humidifiers. Please don't do this to me now.
Do you think they're important? Do you believe in this humidifier thing?
I don't know about important, but they definitely work. Like if you're someone like me who's got a history of asthma and like you happen to be in a room that's a bit stuffy. I remember in the place that I lived in last year, the carpet was like old and stuffy. And I think the previous tenants had like animals and stuff. Anyway, when I moved in, I was like having trouble breathing at night. And literally my doctor's like, bro, get a humidifier. Make sure that you put it on like an hour before you sleep. Blah, 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 blah. By the time I'd sleep, I was actually like fully rested and I wasn't struggling with my breathing anymore. The whole thing of putting oils and what, that's just like, you know, for, you know, when you want to take it up a notch.
It's like a room vape.
It's not a room vape. So if you really need it for medical reasons, do it. Put like the lavender, the eucalyptus oil.
Yes.
During, was it lockdown or that initial COVID where it was really, really hot? Eucalyptus oil at the top of your humidifier. Boom, Bob's your uncle. I swear to God it works. Right. It's not like a hubby where you're just doing things for show. It actually works. Give it a try.
You know, look, some people are going to say this works and some people are not. That's why I brought it up. I knew it was going to be another thing for us to argue about, as if we don't have enough stuff. But I'm with Lebang. What's the harm? So I bought one. Like, I'll report back. You know I'm going to tell you if it's bullshit or if it works. My family all think it's terrific. They've all got these humidifiers. I'll see. If I'm really convinced, I'll let you know right here. But I've done it.
Yeah, please give us feedback, Gareth. And you must get like the last number ones. You see, there's levels. There's those entry level humidifiers that you get on Take a Lot for like 200.
Yeah.
Stay away from those ones.
Yeah.
Go to like Discam where you get the 1.21. That one is an investment. You're buying it for life. And sometimes you just have it on during the day. Like you just want fresh air. You just want air that's intentional. You know, when your guests walk in, they must breathe in some intentional air.
Crack open a window.
Oh, wow.
Crack open a window.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, we'll see how it goes. But, you know, a lot of people say you need the heaters also. I do think heaters are bad. I don't have an air conditioner in my house either for summer. I don't have a heater for winter. I think you just got to go with the seasons like humans have for thousands of years. You're not meant to completely change your environment. But if you can inject a little bit of moisture into the air, that's probably good. Because we do get very dry, especially like you get if you live at the coast, if you live in KZN or in the Eastern Cape or even in the Western Cape, you guys don't know how dry the winters get in Gauteng. It gets really, really dry. Yeah. That's the worst thing about our
winters.
Especially
in the AMs. Oof.
And you wake up early in the morning and you're like, why do I feel like I have a hangover even though I don't have a hangover just because the air is so dry? Not good.
Yeah, no, it's bad. It's bad. And like there's a certain like time of the night when you're sleeping where you get woken up by the air and you're like, oh God, it's so thin. I can't breathe. It's horrible.
Where are you people living? What is this air that's waking you people up that's so thin and whatnot?
What? You're making fun of us because you're from the Karoo. Why don't you give us a lecture? You give us a lecture. I know you want to. Go on.
No. I'm not going to rant, but humidifiers are a myth. Doctors don't suggest them. That's number one. I'm not saying doctors are the only
doctors
thing.
Doctors
like,
recommend.
Really, yeah, doctors don't recommend humidifiers.
Really?
No. Like, they're terrible for you. They basically blow moisture into your lungs and it just sits there. And excessively, this is an exaggeration, but excessively, moisture is bad for your lungs. It condensates, it sits there, and then your lungs collapse. It's bad for you, Lebang.
The word that you used is absolutely correct, my friend. Excessively. Yes. What we are referring to is not the excess use of a humidifier. It's the use of a humidifier to balance the current state of air in the room.
Back to Gareth's point, let nature take its course.
Yeah.
I dog, sometimes Mother Nature needs some help, you know.
This
like
is a gentle hand. No, you don't need to fuddle with that.
Okay. If you have a sick child, and I'm glad that Ruth is bringing this up in the comments. If you've got a sick child who is struggling to breathe, dude, a humidifier does God's work quickly. It just balances things out and the air just gets a little bit. If you don't use it excessively, don't become dependent on it. Please do not do that.
All right.
We're just saying,
this is mostly academic to the average person who's not really, you know, in a position to buy those fancy ones that you were talking about, Lebang. But I'm trying to find little ways that we can make our lives more pleasant. And winter is not my favorite time. So I'm preempting, like, I want to... I don't want to be sitting here complaining about it's so cold and the air is so dry. I'm trying to preempt that by finding a solution. And Bakabantu shooting us down in the comments this morning.
Bro,
you guys just open a window. Get a normal heater, guys. Get those old it was the original humidifier
Those oil
heaters, yeah, those oil heaters that used to smell bad when they like.
Those don't work anymore.
Those are not humidifiers.
They don't work.
Or those paraffin
heaters.
That's what we had as humidifiers. We had those paraffin heaters.
Ooh, those things are dangerous, hey? I wonder how many people's houses have burnt down because those damn things. They're not. Those are not good. Anyway, all right. So I thought I'd throw that in. That's something that I'm going to try out this week. We've also got the month of May means. Technically, you can start now with all of those appliances that you need to make it through the winter. If you've got plans for doing stuff outside, it's time to shelve those until at least September. It's not going to happen. Not pleasant. And you got to bring out all that winter wardrobe stuff. Now, some people get really turned on by the idea of wearing like big coats and scarves and you know, they do. They love this stuff, dude.
Boots.
There are a lot of women who, especially women, who love dressing up for winter. And Lebang just said, and boots, which is proving my point, right? I mean, I've never looked at
it.
I don't look at this and go, oh, yay, I get to wear hoodies and I get to walk around the house in those horrible slippers You know those ugly, big, bulky slippers?
The cute ones for Instagram?
No. Speaking of the cute ones for Instagram, Simpiwe got a pair of those, which we'll show you on the show tomorrow morning. Oh, yeah, because it's National Slipper Day 2022 on the 6th of May, which is the end of this week, Friday. And Simpiwe got a pair of those, and she's going to have them on for the show tomorrow. So don't miss that. That'll be worth coming onto the YouTube channel for tomorrow. No, really. You want to do this.
That's cool. I just like May because it's my birthday month. Like I'm the 27th. It's my full 365. I actually like when people say to me, "How old are you turning?" I have to stop and count because I've just kind of lost track, especially in the past 3 years with COVID. I'm just like, hold on. So I'm just excited that, getting a year older, all of that stuff. People are extra nice to me. Maybe a gift here or there, that kind of thing.
Nico's just bringing you back down to earth, Lebang. Your humidifier uses water, right? You don't have water, Lebang.
Nico. The horror.
Thank you.
Lindin Tuli says, Bakabantu is the same person who will tell us not to use electric blankets.
Yep, pretty much.
See?
You see, those dry you out.
Yeah.
Those literally cook you in your bed.
Yeah. Who doesn't like to be cooked, bro? It's cold out here.
Well, Steph says, I remember my dry hands and lips in winter. Ena. Yeah, that's pretty shit.
You have to sleep with Vaseline next to the bed.
Yeah.
Apply it before you sleep. Wake up in the morning and then you'll...
You got to smear it on. Now smear it all on. You got to have that stuff on your hand. Listen, that moisturizer shit, I've tried, hey. I tried to because we've actually got to get her on. This woman who I go to every now and then for these skin treatments, and she says, in winter you must moisturize. I never remember to do that shit. I just think maybe part of me is like a caveman. And I go, that's for women to do, you know? Like, it's the back of my head. I know I should do it, and I'm probably going to look like a lizard one day because I don't do it. Because you got to start when you're young. You got to do this stuff when you're in your 20s, 30s, and 40s. And by the time you get to your 60s and 70s, you'll be grateful. That's what they always say.
But wait, so Gareth, you don't moisturize at all, or you just like lately you've forgotten?
So half of it is I don't really care about this stuff because I don't think it's what men should do. I know that's so stupid, right? Sounds dumb when I say it. But then the other part of me just doesn't remember. And I honestly forget, then I'm like, shit, I should have done that. So I have the argument in my own head. There's all this stuff going on in my crazy head. And some days I'm like, no, I don't need the moisturizer. I am a man. And then sometimes it's like, I should have put that moisturizer on. It feels shitty. It feels all, you know, in that middle of winter feeling where, like Steph said, your lips go all dry and everything. You wish you'd put something on. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to sit here.
So
and
like you just get out the shower or the bath and you just like continue on with life.
Yeah.
I'm a man.
What do you do, Bakabantu? What do you do? You're anti.
No, you laugh.
You're
anti.
Lather yourself with moisture. You do?
You have to. Otherwise, I go white, but not in the good way. Like, what? What is it?
Go gray. Like,
yeah, you go gray. So you have to moisturize. I come from the school where my grandmother used to Vaseline me up and insulate me against all weather, where even the sweat, you never used to break the Vaseline barrier. So you come from that school where you can't have cracks. You can't be cracked. You can't be
ashy.
You can't be ashy. That's it. You can't be ashy.
Yeah, if you know that ashy, you see here by your elbows.
Elbows and knees. And they even had an ad, Gareth.
It was an
knees
ad.
And elbows.
And I think you had some in your office, Gareth. You had two of those in your...
I did.
He brought it for you specifically and you're still not using it.
Vaseline. No, they brought them to us. They brought them to our office and I kept one of them there because I was like, in the middle of winter, must put on the elbows. Because, I mean, listen. I know we should be doing this shit. I know that we should be thinking about these things, but it's too early in the winter for me to think about it now. I will I will do it by necessity at some point.
But people take it far, hey? You see these ads with like firming lotion, start now, and then in 20 years the skin won't let go, collagen and replacement therapies. Yeah, people are deep into that, investing into their future lives, eh? Nah, guys, must live for today. YOLO.
YOLO, but put moisturizer on.
Yeah, Gareth, put moisturizer on.
All right, I'm taking your advice. Don't worry. You can't be out there all ashy during the people, says Ndogozo.
During the people, imagine. During the people, you're like, ashy. You're like,
you were in Cape Town for 4 days with amazing people, and I'm sure none of them were ashy. In fact,
Rubbing elbows with them, Gareth, and you were there with your ashy elbows.
Shut up about my ashy elbows, you bastards. Leave me alone. Remember
you
that ad?
This upon yourself.
Viasen says, do you remember that ad where you can scratch on the word dry, but they never used a white person's hand? I don't remember that. I remember the ad, but I don't remember the race of the person at all. Gareth, you haven't aged in 20 years. Please, you'll never look like a shriveled prune. Oh, don't be so sure. Listen, people go backwards very quickly, hey?
Yeah.
I've seen some people, they're good up to a certain point, and then they go... Yeah.
It starts deteriorating. It catches up to you like in one fell swoop.
I'll moisturize tomorrow. Tomorrow becomes next week. Next week becomes next year. Next year becomes never.
I will wait to have you two, Lebang and Bakavantu. I'll wait for you to tell me in like 5 years time, you should have moisturized.
and you know, Gareth, see that you know, it's not a myth. Black don't crack. So yes, we will be there. We will be there, ready to tell
we'll
you.
We'll be there, Vaseline-ing up.
We'll see you. We'll see you by child number 8, Lebang. We'll see how well you're doing. Huh? We'll catch
number
up
8,
with you.
More like 10. That's the goalpost now. We're shifting it.
One child a year. Like we have deadlines to meet here. One child a year. Yeah, pop them up.
Oh, man. All right. A couple of things that are going on that we need to talk about a little bit. Bakavantu brought this up with me just before we started the show, and I can't believe this, but there are now operations that people are having to make themselves taller. You know, there comes a point where your vanity, because this is down to vanity, like however tall or short you are, I used to think that was a fixed thing. There was nothing you could do about that. If you're tall... and you're too tall and you want to be shorter, sorry, that's just tough. Mother Nature has made you tall. It's in your genes. Bugger all you can do. And if you're too short, too bad. There's nothing you can do about it. I used to think that. Well, trust the cosmetic surgeons and the aesthetic surgeons and the people who even the quacks who've come out now, and they're trying to show that they can actually make people taller. But if you listen to the process that people have to go through to be made taller, it sounds like absolute agonizing hell. It sounds like something you wouldn't do to your worst enemy, let alone to yourself.
You see, Gareth, also, it's like it's such a tall person mentality of you, Gareth, to think tall people want to be short. No one wants to be short, guys.
No, you're right. I've never met, especially like no man wants to be shorter than his girlfriend.
Yeah, no man. No man wants to be short. Like, oh, I wish I was shorter. 7 feet. Oh, such a curse. No, but like the process, Lebang, is terrible. So you need 2 years. You need 75 grand. And you need physical therapy. What they do is, you know, your femur, right? Like your hip bone.
Yeah.
No, your femur is your hip bone, but it's down to your knee. It's the longest bone from your hip or your waist down to your knee.
So yeah, so they take that, they basically drill holes in it, cut that in half, insert a titanium like rod that's like a drill, and then you get these magnet type things that every day you're supposed to use in order to unscrew this thing so that it becomes longer. And after all of this excruciating pain, you can't walk. You need a walker or a wheelchair.
Oh my God.
Then after all of this, you paid 75 grand to get this. And then you need 2 years to recover. And you can't walk for those 2 years. And the second year, you need physical therapy to relearn how to walk again. How is that a thing? And here's the kicker, Lebang. The guy who did it was 5'7". You know how tall he is now? 5'10". Got 3 inches, 75 grand.
So how much is 3 inches going to make a difference? Not really a lot, eh?
Not really a lot, but this guy swears by it. He's like, oh, people aren't looking down at me. He cries every time people look him at eye level now. He's like, oh, this has changed my life. I'm like, this literally changed this guy's really? Life. But yeah, he was terrorized by TikTok, apparently. That's what got him to make the surgery. He got inundated with people. You're so short. Women are hating on short men and whatnot. So then, again, on TikTok, you got this ad to go, and then this doctor explains it on TikTok. Am I getting my medical advice from TikTok?
If you are getting medical advice from TikTok, I think you are in for a world of pain, not just the femur pain, but the pain you're going to have everywhere in your head, because TikTok is the worst place for anyone to have themselves evaluated by a crowd. That just sounds like you're inviting horror into your life.
Honestly, this just sounds like an insecure individual who has just sadly never been content with who they are and the size they are, and therefore seeks validation from the outside world, and therefore is willing to pay 75,000 rand and lose 2 years of walking life in order to get taller. And it's very, very, very sad that this is what we've come to. I mean, if there's like a medical reason as to why a person would need to do this, I get it. But dude, I know some short guys that are like the best people in the room. They're so funny. They're so this, they're so, because they're just confident in who they are. If you have to go to the extent of like getting taller because you, you know, I guess lacking, amen.
It is vanity, because there's no other reason. Dude. To be taller is purely an aesthetic thing. And of course, it has its consequences. I'm not going to pretend that people don't feel, you know, more or less confident if they're taller or shorter. I know you said just now it's like tall privilege, Bakabantu, because no one actually wants to be shorter. But the fact is, it's all in your head. And I agree with Lebang. If you're a short guy and you haven't figured that out, and you haven't figured out how to navigate the world as a shorter guy and put that aside and get on with your life, by the age of 20, you are in for a world of pain. Your life's not going to get better from there. It's going to get a whole lot markedly worse. So to then go through the physical anguish of doing this is crazy. I don't think this should be allowed on an ethical level. There shouldn't be any of this allowed. It's like those people who have so much plastic surgery, they start to look like cats or like plastic dolls. You know, it shouldn't be allowed. And the doctors who acquiesce to this are doing those clients no favors.
A huge disservice.
They should should be arrested along with the people who are doing this themselves, because it's bad. You got to work on your own idea of yourself. How you feel about yourself is more important than how you actually look or how you think you look to other people. And frankly, no one's thinking about you. If you went through this to gain 3 inches of height and that's what's changed your life,
now you feel better.
I don't think that's your biggest problem.
He feels astronomically better. No, he says he's like, he's so good now.
No, please.
He says he's so good now.
He's a moron.
I don't know. And is this like, when you say 75 grand, is this like $75,000?
Dollars.
Oh,
this
my.
Is dollars. Here's the guy. Here's the guy, by the way. Look, so here's the dude. Here he was before. They've blanked out his face. That's obviously his doctor standing next to him, right? And there's a picture of him. He's 5'3" and then he's 5'9", and he feels like it's much better. But the other thing that they've done here is they've really just made your thighs longer. They haven't made your
They made your thighs longer. Yeah, so it's now, disproportional because you have like these short like shins now.
Right. You don't want to be disproportionate. That doesn't make sense. To be disproportionately short or tall is not a good thing either. It's going to look wacky. It's going to look a bit weird.
He should get the arms done also.
Well,
I was about to say, he'll never be satisfied. It'll be like, okay, cool. Now I'm taller. But these arms, they also need a bit of work. Then he gets the arms. And it's going to be, but the way my neck is set up, can I just do a bit of neck? I promise you, like,
never
nothing
stops.
Will be enough.
Nah.
It'll never be enough.
The views of Cliff Central is that size does not matter, according to Lebang and Gareth.
Yes, we are proponents of that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Bye, guys. Let me just drop
out. That's what we're saying.
I wanted to be taller, but then realized that the best of us is down to earth and the best in us, says Yonda, being very philosophical here. That's nice.
Love that.
All right. Most of Hollywood's
that's the energy right there.
Most of Hollywood's big name actors are little short asses, and that has not held them back. Napoleon also did well being short. Well, he wasn't as short as people say he was. That was a bit of English propaganda about Napoleon. Height may be the first form of human discrimination among humans. Dwarves used to be killed at birth. That's true. Easy Picking says.
Good point.
You know, we're always going to find reasons to find ourselves either to be privileged or underprivileged, but I think this is crazy. Like, to be this much shorter or taller is maybe it's because, again, I'm not aware of this stuff so much. I'm what, 6'3"? I'm 187 centimeters
tall. You're pretty tall, dude.
I don't, when I meet a person who's not as tall as me, I don't think immediately, oh, that's a short person.
Yeah, but that's also because that's who you are. A lot of people out there just judge people based on things like that. Like, oh, you're short, so you must automatically be lesser than, or whatever the case is. There's just a lot of judgments and like lameness that's in the ether.
You know what, Lebang? I'm telling you, if people sort out their mental health first, they'll have less worries about their physical appearance. And please, guys, not that I have to tell this to the people who listen to us, because you're not idiots, otherwise you wouldn't be here. I think that's saying more about you than it is about me and Lebang. But the fact is, if you're going to TikTok for self-help, you've got such ugliness coming your way. TikTok.
I don't think anybody listening to the show does that. I know it. Mm-mm. Nobody listening to the show is that kind of person. No. But if you know anybody out there that does, then please help them.
Stop them. Just stop them. And if you're a doctor, if you're a cosmetic surgeon who's actually breaking people's legs to make them taller, I think there's something unethical about that. There's something going on. And taking what did Bakabantu say? 75,000 rand a time for doing this.
75,000 US dollars. Honey. Oh, right. Dollars, not rand.
Dollars. Yes, sus.
That's even worse, bro.
All right. So, speaking of mental health, in a very tidy little segue, let's get on to our expert of experts and someone who we have had on cliffcentral.com and who's been doing his own series. It's the second series already, called Beyond Madness. His name is Professor Christopher Paul Szabo. He is terrific. We've had him on Cliff Central now for a while. He does the most interesting podcast in the country on mental health. I can say that because I listen to it and I find it fascinating. It's a podcast series that features psychiatrists in conversation. They cover a broad range of topics related to issues in psychiatry that impact everybody and society in general. Mental health issues that affect us all on a daily basis, how we deal with these issues, how they affect you, someone in your life at any given time. The series will give you, if you haven't listened to it yet, a better understanding of psychiatry and of mental health. And they've got some new episodes which are absolutely fascinating. To tell us about this, here he is. Prof. Szabo, nice to see you. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, I'm up early.
Yes.
And happy to be here. I hope you're well.
I'm very, very happy to see you. And you're in our studio, which is not a place unfamiliar to you. First of all, Prof, congrats.
Sitting in my favorite chair, by the way. I've got my own chair. I know what it feels like.
Oh, good. Okay. You know what? You've got to be in a comfortable environment to be able to deliver the kind of content that you do. I'm thrilled that we're already on to season two. And for those people who've already listened to season one, they got lots more to look forward to. But Prof,
I think so.
It's such an interesting world that we're living in at the moment. Mental health has become a subject which is, maybe some people still think it's a little bit taboo, but I think it's becoming very mainstream. I think people are fascinated by it. I think everybody realizes that this is a part of being human that has so far perhaps been underexplored. And in many parts of the world, there are people who haven't yet developed the tools that they so desperately need in order to make their lives more meaningful, to take themselves out of trauma or serious mental disorders. There are ways that we can now deal with these things to help people cope with a life that before would have had you consigned to an institution or a hospital. And now people on the street are talking about their mental health in what I think is quite an encouraging and forward-thinking and progressive way. So, I mean, you're really the man of the moment in so many ways here, because you've been dealing with this for years. But it's such an interesting set of subjects.
Well, I think that, the opening line of the podcast is no health without mental health. Yes. And I think that that comes from the World Health Organization. So I think that we in psychiatry and related fields certainly are very conscious of the impact that your mental health has on your general functioning. Because if you don't have mental health, at the end of the day, you don't function optimally in whatever role you might be playing. So I do think that certainly, I suppose, from within the discipline, we've always had a sense of that. I think what's happened is it's become somewhat more mainstream in terms of mental health. But I think we need to distinguish mental health from mental illness, because I think psychiatry per se is about recognizing, diagnosing, and treating mental illness, which will ultimately contribute towards mental health. So I wouldn't say that it necessarily focuses specifically on mental health for the general population,
right,
in terms of what the discipline does. But certainly what the discipline does is it contributes towards mental health. And there is an awareness that without mental health, there is ultimately no health. And so in that sense, I think the message from the discipline is a much more broadly relevant message for society as a whole.
You know, Prof, there are lots and lots of people all over the world who've been doing podcasts, including Prince Harry and Oprah, on mental health, but from a very pedestrian point of view. You know, as a psychiatrist, and perhaps it'll be useful and illustrative for you to just describe to us the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist, for starters. And second of all,
okay,
to talk about the fact that you very often will unpack some quite extraordinary and academic and very new ideas in the discipline with other psychiatrists. That's part of what you do here. But a lot of the stuff that you talk about is also stuff that we can relate to as ordinary folks, you know, and there are many people who are very interested in this stuff. So let's just start with those definitions. I think it might help people.
Yeah. Well, I think that psychology and psychiatry are obviously related disciplines. Psychiatry comes from the medical, and so therefore, in order to be a psychiatrist, you need to qualify first as a medical doctor.
Yes.
Having qualified as a medical doctor and you've been through your 2 years of internship and 1 year of community service, you then might either decide to go into general practice as a general practitioner, mm-hmm, or you may decide to specialize, in which case you will then undertake further training, usually a minimum of 4 years. And before you can actually get into the specialist training program, there's usually a requirement that you've done 6 months or a year of other medical specialties at the what they call a medical officer level. So before you become a specialist in training. So when you look at it, by the time a psychiatrist exits as a qualified psychiatrist, having written their exit exams, which are hosted by the Colleges of Medicine of South Africa. So you've got to write a college exam,
yes,
to get admitted to the College of Psychiatrists. That's, what would that be? That would be 6, 7, 8, 9, 13 to 14 years from time of entry to time of exit. So you're talking about an 18-year-old who enters medical school, 18, 19 years old. You will exit as a specialist in your early 30s. So it's a real commitment. Now, psychology, and obviously the 4 years that you spend specializing is completely dedicated to psychiatry. It's not to say that you don't have involvement with other medical specialist disciplines, such as neurology specifically, but certainly you are focused. So it's an extended period of time. And during that time, you rotate. You go from inpatient units to outpatient units, working in the community, working in units that have specialist focuses within the specialist discipline, such as eating disorders, child and adolescent, forensic psychiatry. So there are a lot of subspecialist areas within the specialist discipline. Psychology comes from the humanities. So you have a basic Bachelor of Arts degree, then you move into honors, and then you get into masters. And I must say, it's not easy to get into masters from honors into psychology. That is,
yes,
that is a selection process. I often hear a lot of youngsters say, no, I want to study psychology. And I say, well, that's good and well. And you can major in psychology as an undergraduate. And if you do well enough, you'll get into honors. But the step up from honors to masters, and I stand under correction, but it's been my experience working extensively with psychologists over many decades, that the step up from honors to masters is a selection process. And there's no guarantee that you will get into the master's program, certainly not at first shot. Because
wow,
I think psychology, like psychiatry, is a more what I would call mature discipline.
Right.
You need to have some kind of life experience. You need to be credible in a sense, so that when a patient walks into the room, they've got a sense that they can trust you, believe in you, and that you've got something to offer beyond a technical ability to simply diagnose and treat. You want somebody who's got a little bit of, I'm going to use the word gravitas, but maybe one earns that after many decades. I don't think
sure
you get that as a
experience,
as a younger person.
You know,
so certainly those are the fundamental differences.
So, Prof, someone says here, Easy Picking says, this man explains concepts incredibly well. He's a great guest. Well, that's why he's got his own show, because a lot of these concepts, and Lebang, I'm sure you've heard this too. You know, you hear people on the street, when I say on the street, you know, you hear like friends at a braai, or you go to dinner with somebody, and then they suddenly they're also a mental health expert, even though they've never studied any of this stuff. They've never done any of this work that Prof. Zabo's just told us about. And then they suddenly start throwing around terms like, oh, you know, this person is bipolar and diagnosing things. Yeah. Now, this is very dangerous. As much as we want people to be talking about mental health, that doesn't mean that you're an expert just because you have a friend who has some condition, or because you yourself were prescribed X medication, or because you've been seeing your shrink and lying there on the couch for, you know, once a week or twice a week or whatever it is. And Prof, it must be frustrating because everybody now thinks just because mental health is so widespread an issue for people, and because it's something everyone's talking about now, that they're all experts. We've got to be very careful.
Well, I think, yes, but I think you raise a very important point without specifically putting your finger on the button. We must be careful not to trivialize through familiarity.
Right.
And I think that this is something that I obviously have an issue with. People, as you say, use terms very loosely, and suddenly everybody becomes a psychiatrist and a psychologist, amateur, I might add. And that's okay. I mean, people have an awareness. There's nothing wrong with having an awareness, but I think beyond awareness, one needs to have understanding. And I think that information is one thing, knowledge is something different. And I think that is acquired through, obviously, experience, working in the discipline, and a thorough and proper schooling in the actual disciplines of psychiatry or psychology. And I think that as much as one wants to promote mental health and create an awareness and understanding of what psychiatry is, what psychiatry does. In a sense, we want to humanize psychiatry because there are all kinds of stereotypes about what psychiatrists do and who psychiatrists are. And I think, you know, Hollywood and literature has certainly contributed in some way to perpetuating stereotypes. And of course, behind stereotypes, there are certain realities. So I think what the show attempts to do is to create an understanding and an awareness, and certainly point people in the right direction in terms of the kind of information that might be useful to them. And so, coming back to where I started out, one must be careful that familiarity doesn't lead to trivialization. Because if everybody has problems, then actually nobody has problems, because that's the norm. So I think we need to be careful that we don't in any way diminish true mental illness with all of the suffering that goes with it, and not just the sufferer, but their extended system involving loved ones, families, friends, peers, etc.
So, Prof, Lebang, go ahead. You got a question.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, like, what we can expect in this new season, like, what kind of shows, and, you know, what are the kind of topics that you guys will be touching on that will be different from what we've heard on the previous shows?
Yeah, certainly we do bring back one or two themes. So, for example, we do have another episode on eating disorders, but I'm going to take a slightly different angle. What you'll see within the new episodes are the concept of living with. Now, living with eating disorders, living with dementia, living with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, living with learning disabilities. And where am I going with that? I'm going to the families, because I think that these conditions, in fact, all psychiatric conditions, are hugely burdensome. And I don't say that in a negative way. They simply are hugely burdensome for loved ones, spouses, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, grandparents, friends, etc. And I think that I wanted to dig in a little bit into the impact on the support system. Because remember, without a support system, the patient doesn't make progress. The patient needs a support system. But how do we understand how the support system deals with a sufferer? So I think that's something that is slightly different, where I'm taking it beyond just talking about a condition, and I'm now starting to look at the impact of certain conditions on the support system. So that is one difference. And of course, aside from eating disorders, we're going to also be looking at ketamine. Ketamine is a very interesting substance. It's an anesthetic drug that now has psychiatric usages, and we're going to be looking beyond depression, where it's starting to kind of establish itself as a potential agent of utility, and be recognized that it has a specific place within the treatment spectrum for depression. But there are other potential indications. And so we're going to take that discussion a little bit further. And I think what you'll also see is that for each episode, I'm trying to have two guests as opposed to one.
Right.
So having a professional, what I would call maybe a content expert, and then trying to bring in somebody, for example, who runs a support group. So who's on the ground with sufferers and getting their perspective, because I don't want to sit and presume that I understand everything that goes on with a patient or their support system. And so it's nice to bring in people who actually are at the coalface in that sense. So we're going to try to always have two guests. And I think that that will be the case for pretty much every single one of my shows coming up, except the show that deals with serial killers. I'm going to have Gerard Labuschagne himself coming in to talk about the psychology of serial killers.
Wow.
So a slightly sort of different take in terms of a podcast that deals with psychiatry. But I think it's an interesting area, and I think it is one which fascinates people as much as it scares people. And so I think we're going to have an interesting conversation there.
That sounds amazing. All right, good stuff. So I think it's important also, Prof, to acknowledge that there's a sponsor here, and that to produce any series of this kind of gravitas, you need to have producers and guests, and you have to be able to set aside time, and it requires research from you and your guests often, so you could present the stuff to the rest of us in a way that we can understand it, because it is your day-to-day stuff. But very often, you know, unless you sit and prepare this stuff, it's not easy to explain these concepts to the rest of us who are trying to catch on.
Yes.
Now, with Beyond Madness, we've got Adcock Ingram OTC, sponsors of Brave. These guys they're really not looking for, hard sell advertising here. They're incredibly clever about the way that they support millions of South Africans in many different ways, not only with their products, but with their very good community service projects that they're involved in. They do a lot of interesting media work in terms of bringing people up to, you know, a point where they can understand some of the issues that affect society. They really have a holistic approach. And I think it's worth mentioning them and their involvement, because people might want to know what that is.
Well, I think, first of all, you have to look at the vision. Mm. And I think that I have to acknowledge Sudhir Rampersad. He's the man who actually encouraged me to undertake this journey of creating podcasts. And I think that it's within a broader umbrella of Adcock Ingram OTC's commitment to health. So it's not just physical health, but it's also mental health. And as you say, I do not ever experience any commercial pressure. It's literally, this is a good thing. We are proud as a program to be associated with Adcock Ingram OTC, and they are comfortable to have our offering within their umbrella of initiatives. So I think it's a very important initiative, starting out looking at frontline healthcare workers. But ultimately, and I have an interview with Nicole Kappa, who's the spokesperson, which actually is part of the first episode, which is going to be released today. Maybe we'll talk about that. And that episode's entitled, interestingly enough, Smart Food for the Brain. And it's the issue of nutritional psychiatry. And I think we're entering into some interesting territory. The science is emerging and evolving. But just getting back to Adcock Ingram OTC. So Nicole is going to be on the show, the first of the new episodes. And so she'll be talking much more about what Adcock Ingram OTC, sponsors of Brave, is all about. But I think it's a very important initiative. And I think it's one that we are very comfortable and happy to be associated with.
Prof, the human brain is still such an unknown and uncharted territory for us. And even though we've developed millions of new ideas, discoveries, we've figured out things that we didn't know before in the last just 10 years, for example, the brain still continues to elude us in some ways. There are some people who think that that medicine is still stuck in the days where, you know, you would just kind of tranquilize people rather than actually be able to pinpoint where exactly in the brain you are treating a certain disorder, where you're able to have an effect on these things. The medicine has come forward in leaps and bounds. There are so many people all over the world. Some of them probably shouldn't be, but there are millions of people all over the world who are on all kinds of meds. for mental health issues. How do you feel about that? Because there are, you know, the people in the comments too who say, well, psychiatrists all over the world are just drug pushers, and really, you know, they're trying to numb all these people who have various either eccentricities or actual disorders or personality disorders or whatever else. There's a fine line here. And is this a subject of interest to you and other psychiatrists?
Well, I think it's an interest to me as a practicing psychiatrist, because I'm well aware of the fact that if you look at psychiatrists simply as individuals who prescribe, then I think that you are missing what psychiatry should be. Mm. And it's not simply about prescribing. Mm-hmm. I think that each person who comes across your threshold before they become your patient has a story. And I think that it's very important to understand the context of that person's presentation and their journey that brings them into your office as a psychiatrist. And simply because somebody walks across the threshold of a psychiatrist's office doesn't necessarily mean that, number one, they're going to receive a psychiatric diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Because remember, we are not simply diagnosing for the sake of diagnosing. Secondly, it doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily leave with a script for medication.
Yeah.
Because medication is a part of a comprehensive package, or should be simply a part of a comprehensive package of intervention, which comes back to the fundamental ethos of psychiatry, which is biopsychosocial. So the biological could require pharmacological and medication interventions. The psychological looks at the individual as a whole person in terms of how they operate in this world, how they understand themselves, how they relate to the people around them, their expectations, their disappointments, their stories, their ways of coping, their ways of dealing with the world. And social is really the context, where we're looking at the context. Who are they connected to? How is their system part of their lives? And how is it part of the solution as well? So I think that psychiatry as a discipline should be practiced in a biopsychosocial way. Unfortunately, and I think there is a certain understanding that if you go and see a psychiatrist, you're going to walk out with a script an arm long. No, that should not be the case. I personally, so I speak for myself, I don't speak for my colleagues, I'm very conservative in prescribing. You have to, as I say, earn your medication. I have to be really convinced that you need medication. And there's some times where it's not even a discussion. However, before you cross that line, there is a thorough discussion with the patient as to, this is what I think. These are the reasons why I think what I do about what is going on. And you come to an agreement, you reach a consensus of understanding. And consensus is important because that impacts on compliance with whatever you are going to do. So at the end of the day, before you actually prescribe, you need to go through a process of creating an understanding of why it might be necessary. Because even if a person comes to see you and they accept that they're seeing a psychiatrist and medication might be an option, there is generally wariness and a certain reluctance. And I can understand that. I mean, you're putting powerful drugs into your body, which could change the way you feel, change the way you think, not in a bad way, but
Sometimes in a bad way it could. I mean,
Potentially, absolutely. Yeah. And so that's why you have to understand what are the pros, what are the cons.
Right.
And therefore, when the patient leaves with a script and is going to embark on a treatment process, they have a clear understanding. So once again, we come down to something very fundamental. Honesty, respect, and ultimately communication. These are very important components of any doctor-patient interaction, not just in psychiatry. And I'm often very distressed to hear how little of that goes on in my other disciplines or related medical disciplines. But I think this is really important. And we come down to the issue of time. You need time. Time is very important. And we kind of move through things in this world generally very quickly when we should be really just having the conversations, creating the awareness, not just the awareness, but creating understanding. And then there's a comfort in knowing, okay, I understand what's going on. I understand what this professional is suggesting and why they're suggesting it. And we're walking this journey. We're walking this path together. I think that's very important.
Prof, if I could, just because you've had, you know, quite a number of years of experience under the belt and you've seen a lot of changes, how would you, looking back on your own career and on the progress of psychiatry, How would you define, for people who look at it from the outside, some of the biggest moves and the biggest changes in your discipline over the some, you know, 30-odd, maybe 40-odd years that you've been really paying attention to this and watching how much has changed?
Well, you know, I think it's a very challenging question you've answered, because I could give you an answer that says, I don't know that much has changed, quite frankly. Mm. I mean, if I look at, for example, we're starting to repurpose drugs because we've maybe hit a little bit of a wall in terms of progress. I think that it's something that you mentioned earlier, which is our understanding of the brain. And so I think psychiatry has become a much more science-based discipline. And I think in a sense, it's medicalized more. But I think in the attempt to medicalize, we have to be careful that we don't dehumanize. And I think that one of the qualities that psychiatry has is that it's a very human discipline. And so whatever scientific progress is made, whatever changes take place, we have to always be very careful that we don't become a tick box discipline where we just literally tick off the symptoms, reach a diagnosis, and then we have an algorithmic approach to how we treat patients.
Right.
We must never lose our humanity as a discipline, because psychiatry is not just a science, it's an art. And I think it's the art of engaging, understanding, and through that, assisting as one human being to another. So I think the humanity of psychiatry is something that, whatever the progress might be scientifically, the humanity must not be lost. Otherwise, we lose the discipline and we lose what makes it special.
I just want to quickly add here before we go. I'm so glad you brought up the word dehumanize, because, I mean, I'll be 100% honest with you. From the outside looking in, when I think psychiatry, or more so growing up, I just thought, this is too expensive. You know, this is something that I can just go down the road and speak to somebody who's had a lot of life experience about it. Maybe they can help me. You know, the stereotype has kind of been that it's just, you know, it's not the only answer per se. But after listening to some of your shows, I'm like, really, all it takes is like a better understanding and just listening to really the how in which you guys really, you know, decipher these matters. And then you realize that, oh, okay, this is a science. This is really, you're not just going to sit on a couch and have a conversation in the movies and walk out feeling better, like we've been sort of raised to believe. It is so much more of a human thing than anything else. And I've really come to appreciate it as an art, as you're saying, after listening to just the range of topics, like the alcohol abuse and the eating disorders. I was like, damn, these are things that don't affect me directly, but I'm generally interested in, after listening to how you guys tackle it. So I can see the comment section are on fire, but generally I would suggest listening to the show. It's just understanding more, even if it's not a you thing.
That's such a good point that Lebang makes. I mean, everybody's, you know, got their opinions, but to actually engage with this stuff, it might require a little bit of work from people who want to have knee-jerk opinions about things. Is that part of the reason you're doing it?
Well, I think you said something very important. You used the word work. Psychiatry is work. When you go and see a psychiatrist or a psychologist, you go there to work. You don't necessarily leave their office feeling good, because very often you've dealt with very difficult issues. And the sort of therapeutic effect. So I kind of look at psychotherapy, for example, in the same way as I look at medication. Sometimes you get the side effect before you get the therapeutic effect. Therapy is hard. You're dealing with difficult issues and it requires work. So it's not a holiday, and you're not going in there just to be made to feel good. You're going in there to deal with issues, which ultimately, if you deal with them in the correct way, you will feel better. And ultimately, potentially, you will feel good, hopefully. But I wanted to touch on something. You know, not every problem requires a psychiatrist. Not every problem requires a psychologist. There are wise people around you, in your family, in your community. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to necessarily go and see a mental health professional because you're not feeling so great. Obviously, one looks at the extent to which that is happening, how it impacts upon your life in terms of quality and your ability to function. And that kind of maybe distinguishes, well, maybe I need something more than just a chat. But certainly, the purpose of the show, and I've I've mentioned it earlier, is to really give people a behind-the-scenes look at what goes into psychiatry as a discipline, the many facets, the complexities. And so you get a one-on-one interaction that lasts 15 minutes or 1 hour, but going into that, into what is being said, into what is being shared, there are many, many layers of insight, knowledge, and understanding that get crystallized into the exchange that takes place between a patient and a psychiatrist.
Prof, I think this is part of the reason that if you're interested in this, you have to listen to season two of Beyond Madness. And if you haven't listened to season one, go back and listen to those episodes too. They're also available and they're all fantastic. Professor Christopher Paul Szabo, it's always great to have you on. There aren't enough psychiatrists in South Africa by a long way. You already mentioned how difficult it is for people to end up being qualified and experienced enough to call themselves psychiatrists. And we don't have nearly the right number of workers across the spectrum of mental health that we have problems for. Isn't that right? I mean, South Africa is really...
Absolutely. No. I mean, if you
compare... The resources are spread very thin.
Very thin. And so we have to do what's called task shifting.
Yeah.
We have to move the discipline to other disciplines, including nurses, pharmacists. You know, at Cook Ingram OTC, Sponsors of Brave is very much focused on pharmacists. And obviously, we're a mental illness, mental health podcast. But there is definitely your frontline workers beyond psychiatrists. Your general practitioner is very important, your family physician. So, I mean, there are a whole host of other medical and allied medical professionals who do form part of the repertoire or the smorgasbord, so to speak, of care. So not everything has to reach a psychiatrist on the one hand, but also there are shortages of psychiatrists on the other hand. And so we have to be a little bit innovative in terms of how we upskill others who could provide some of the basic care along the way to potentially needing a psychiatrist. So we're very conscious of that as a discipline as well.
Take a listen. You've got lots of great content, awesome material, and Prof, please keep supplying us with all the information that we need. This is really, really interesting for people who are in the profession of psychiatry.
Absolutely,
it fulfills the role that maybe some of those journals that maybe some people do read, some people probably don't anymore. It fulfills that because you've got these conversations between really interesting people from all over the world who are dealing sometimes in very specialized ways with these subjects, right down to Lebang and I who are interested in the subject matter just from the observer point of view. And if you've got people in your life who are going through some of this, this may help you to understand as a member of that extended community what's really going on with them. It's just another reason to listen to Beyond Madness every Tuesday. It is live at 10 a.m. or you can get the podcast wherever you listen on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else. And that is Beyond Madness in association with Adcock Ingram OTC, the sponsors of Brave. Professor Christopher Paul Szabo, so nice to see you, and thanks for being on our show.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me and getting behind the show. And I must acknowledge my new producer, Doria van Lochrenburg.
She's great.
She's been very helpful, and Aaron Modise, who does the technical. So I've got a good team. I'm very happy, and hopefully we're going to produce episodes that people are going to enjoy.
We are already enjoying them. Thanks, Prof. Great to have you on. That's all we got time for today, everybody. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Have a good Tuesday. Cheers.
Bye. CliffCentral.com.